you set me up because I didn't realize it was Super Bowl night a few months ago when you, I'm joking. Hey, my old home group used to meet on Sundays and I never miss a Sunday night because of the Super Bowl. So, I'm glad to be here. I'm a guy that, I try a lot of ways to get sober prior to joining Alcoholics Anonymous or prior to knowing anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, church, religion, psychiatry, switching brands and exercising, eating vegetables and shaving my head. And I did all kinds of stuff to try to quit drinking. None of it worked. So, until a guy came in and talked to me from Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sitting in a detox, I had never heard anything like what he was saying. And he was basically sharing his experience with me. And I know now he was doing what Ken talked about. He was telling me how he established a relationship with God and how fellowship had saved his life and helped him, power had helped him be relieved of the drink obsession. And I've been sober ever since. And I honestly believe today that if religion would have worked, you'd have a different speaker. If a psychiatrist had worked in solving my alcoholism, you'd have a different speaker. If the threat of a first sergeant, military, or the Harnett County deputy would work, you'd have a different speaker. The love of a wife and the threats of a mother, I mean, none of that stuff ever worked for me. Medication, meditation, none of it worked. I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a great time to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to have an actual solution that helps us to be free and not live in fear. And that's been my experience. My first memory was fear. Now I grew up, I'm a guy that was riddled with fear. Didn't really know that's what it was, but I just knew I was scared to death as a kid. Grew up in a family where a lot of drinking took place, a lot of hell raising, a lot of, just chaotic, episode after episode. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but I had cool parents. Grew up in Northern Virginia, just outside of DC. And both my parents were bad drinkers. And we had this, my dad had this basement in his house we lived in. He had this bar with these like black lights and these old velvet posters that would light up when he'd hit them black lights, and had all kinds of, bar stuff. And they would hold these parties and people would come over. And then my dad was, he was a cool dude. He had a big old afro and the pork chop sideburns and had tattoos. Now back in the 70s, not everybody had tattoos. Now we got babies that are born with tattoos on them. But, back then, if you had tattoos, you'd either been to prison or in the military or you were in a motorcycle gang. I think he'd been in all three. He had this tattoo on his arm of the devil. He had a tattoo of his tiger. He had this tattoo over here that said mom. Then he had one on this arm that had a lady's name on it that wasn't my mom's. And, no one ever asked him who that was. But they would, they'd have these parties and it would be exciting starting off, all these people coming over, and me and my brothers would be walking around, letting people pick on us and all that. But it would inevitably always turn into somebody would get into a fight. Somebody would mess with somebody else's boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife. Somebody get hurt, gun might go off in the house, and somebody would leave mad, and then other people would go pick them up, had to get them out of the jail, and I would get scared. And when all that happened, I can remember thinking, man, I am never going to be like that when I get older, not going to drink like they do, not going to, cause problems for people like they do. I think I meant it. But it seems like a few days after making all those promises, I started drinking, and I started drinking around the age of 12. And my first real experience with drinking was in the basement of a guy's house in Virginia. And his dad had this bar, kind of like my dad's bar, and had all kinds of liquor. And we started drinking. And up to that point, I was, as I said earlier, I was full of fear. I just felt empty on the inside. I felt like everybody else knew stuff and I didn't, and just felt like there was something missing. And I got that whiskey in me. I can remember that night just like it's right now. We were drinking Old Granddad 100 proof. I got that stuff in me, man. It lit me up like a firecracker. All that fear and doubt, confusion, insecurity, anxiety, depression, whatever you want to call it. I didn't know any of those words back then, but whatever that is, it went away. And I immediately became smarter, better looking, stronger. The feeling was incredible. Woke up next morning, a pile of vomit, was sick as a dog. And the first thought in my mind was, my God, I got to do this again. I didn't swear it off forever or anything like that. I guess, you know, most people, when you get sick on something, you don't go back to it. But the feeling it gave me prior to getting sick was something I was going to go back to just as quick as I could. And I did. The next day I got drunk, drinking that Old Granddad again. And the same thing happened. All that fear went away. It made me just feel like I was the king. Didn't get sick that time. And basically what happened was I immediately just knew that I was going to drink the rest of my life. I mean, didn't know these words again. But it just seemed like a solution. It just seemed like that's the way I always wanted to feel, was the way that the alcohol made me feel. And I'm a guy that took to it like a fish to water. And I don't think I was an alcoholic. I don't think I was suffering from any kind of disease or anything like that. I was just a guy that was full of fear and was disconnected from the world. And I'll fix that. And I enjoyed it. And I loved it. I'm also not one of these guys that you'll hear say that their worst day sober is better than their best day drinking. Well, that ain't true for me. I guarantee you that. I had some good times drinking. I mean, I had some better times drinking than the day I had today. If the truth was known about that. I'm also not a guy that's got a drink to get into trouble. I'll get into trouble sober. You'll hear people say that every time they drank, they didn't get in trouble, but every time they got in trouble, they were drinking. That ain't true for me. I'll get in trouble tonight in the grocery store if I'm not careful. So none of that stuff, none of that drinking didn't cause any of that stuff. I was a chaotic, rebellious, full of fear, self-centered guy before I ever took a drink. You could argue, some people would argue, I did better drinking than I did when I was sober. I don't know if that's true or not, but what happened was I took to it. I loved drinking. I loved partying. I loved getting into trouble. I loved the courage that alcohol gave me to stand up to the bully, the courage it gave me to talk to the girls. I was a guy that, you know, if you dare, if there was something crazy to do, they're going to dare me to do it, and I'm going to do it. And that's just kind of I thrive on that kind of attention and being just a little crazier and a little better than everybody else. And that was kind of the story of my life. And what happened to me was I got into a lot of trouble, and I got into trouble sober, and I got in trouble drinking. I was just a crazy, chaotic guy. I got kicked out of the Fairfax County school system. Was told not to come back. I got kicked out of the Stafford County school system. Was told not to come back. Didn't realize at the time that this, when these things happened, it actually required my parents to move. So the whole family would have to move so I could go to school. I didn't even realize that until I got sober. I mean, that's just kind of how self-centered I was. I just thought it was cool. Man, they kicked me out of school. And I'd brag about that to everybody else. And I didn't realize it was impacting the whole family. And what happened to me was, I continued to drink. I continued to get into trouble. I got into a bunch of trouble in North Carolina. was charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, assault on a police officer, and a bunch of other stuff. And that's how I ended up in the military. They said, if you go into the Air Force or go into the military, we'll drop these charges. And basically that's what happened was I agreed to go at the age 18. I went to the Air Force. Another guy went to prison that was involved in some of the stuff we were doing. And I went to the Air Force with this idea that my life was going to change, that I was going to, they were going to teach me some discipline. I was going to learn how to be responsible. I was going to prove to my family that I could be a good guy and do the right thing. I had all those good intentions and didn't carry through with any of them. I ended up getting drunk the very first opportunity I could, right out of basic training. You know, was stationed up, got stationed up in Rantoul, Illinois, which is not a good spot. Now, I'm gonna tell you that right now. That's rough. And they tell you when you get there, right, the first sergeant or the base commander tells you all these places you're not supposed to go to, these off-limit places. Of course, those are the first places that I go to. And, man, I started drinking like nobody's business. I started blacking out. I'd wake up. I don't remember what happened the night before. I'd wake up and, you know, find out that I got into a fight with my friend that I went to the bar with the night before, but I don't remember punching him in the face. I'd wake up with other people's clothes on. I was living in a dorm with 200 guys. I woke up one morning with some women's clothes on. And I can tell you, that's not a good thing to be dressed up like a woman, wake up in the morning and you're in a room with 200 guys and you can't remember what happened. That's actually one of the times where you're glad you don't remember. You don't, I mean, you don't want to know what happened. And things like this would happen. And I wouldn't think much about it. I just kind of thought everybody blacked out. I thought that, you know, everybody woke up the next day and couldn't really remember everything that happened. And I was a guy that I felt one way on the inside and acted a different way on the out. And I wanted to be a good guy. I had all these good intentions of trying to do the right thing and being responsible and having some discipline, but I just never could put that to action. And I also felt that I had these ideas that if I could just live in the right spot or have the right job or be with the right person, that things would be different. I lived in this fantasy world that one day my ship's just going to come in and everything's going to be just right. And, you know, none of that ever happened. I would always search for something outside to try to like fix me. And I got married at a very young age, thinking that that was going to teach me some responsibility. And that didn't happen. I mean, matter of fact, the day we got married, I was drunker than a billy goat. And that I often wonder why that Baptist preacher married us. He had to have known I was drinking. And the only thing I can figure is he might have been drunker than I was, and he just didn't want to say anything about it. But we ended up our honeymoon in a place called the Shaggers. Now, it's a bar in Dunn, North Carolina. Now, most people, when they get married, they go to like the beach or to an island or, you know, someplace kind of, you know, cool or exotic. We ended up in a place called the Shaggers. And pretty certain one of us got into a fight that night and got maced, and they kicked us out. And, you know, woke up the next morning. I do remember waking up the next morning. We had, in this townhouse we were living in, I think she was upstairs and I was downstairs. And the marriage kind of went downhill from there. What I can tell you is that I continued to drink. Didn't know it at the time, didn't even understand some of these words that we learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I continued to be selfish. I continued to be self-centered. I continued to just operate in just full-blown self-centered fear. I didn't know what all that was. didn't really understand any of it. But looking back on it, I know that all I was concerned about was myself. And I was also consumed with what people thought about me, and I thought the whole world was kind of looking at me and plotting against me and out to get me. And the only thing that would kind of make that go away was drinking. And I was a bad husband. I was mentally, physically, verbally abusive to my wife. Now, I will say this. She was mentally, physically, and verbally abusive to me, too. And she won more than I did. She was tough. It was sad. It was sick. I mean, we both were sick. I mean, it was just one chaotic episode after another. Somebody would leave. We'd get back together. We'd try it again. We'd leave. We'd get back together. And it was just this vicious cycle. And mostly all my fault and my doing. And I was a bad member of the Air Force. I worked on airplanes drunk many, many, many times. Never really thought about people that actually flew on them. And what happened to me was I started to become really conflicted about the way I was living. And I wasn't a complete idiot. And I knew that there was something wrong. I didn't know what it was. I knew that I was far from normal. And I started to kind of make attempts to slow down it wasn't necessarily all the time like I'm going to quit drinking. It was today's the day I'm going to get my life in order. You know, and then I would try. And it would last about 30 minutes because I would start drinking. And once I started drinking, there was just no telling where I was going to end up or what I was going to do. I would make promises to people. I'd break the promises 30 minutes after making them. Then I would lie. Then that would lead to another lie. And it was just, you know, it was on and on and on. My first real attempt at trying to quit was, it was January the 1st, 1989. I'd been out for drinking, partying for 10 or 11 days. And I had gotten into a fight with my wife on Christmas Eve. She was attempting to have this little party at the house, and they were just going to have a few people over. And I remember asking me to not drink too much and kind of slow down and go easy. And I didn't. I picked a fight in front of all of her friends just so I'd have an excuse to leave. And I left. And I stayed gone from then till that New Year's morning, just basically out riding the roads, acting like a fool. And what happened was me and these two guys on January the 1st, I had talked them into driving all the way to Oxon Hill, Maryland with me to rob a guy. Now, it doesn't make too much sense to drive about 300 miles. We were in Coates, North Carolina. We were going to go to Maryland to rob this dude that I knew. Now, we could have drove anywhere probably within a 10 or 15 mile radius and robbed some other people without having to drive 300 miles. Anyway, we leave Coates to go drive to Maryland, and we get down the road just a few miles, and I start hearing these voices telling me that I needed to get my life together. Man, what are you doing? You're headed for destruction. I couldn't shut it down. And it got so bad, I pulled off to this convenience store and made a phone call. I told these guys I got to make a quick phone call before we head on out, and called one of my brothers who was a member of a church. He kept telling me that they were praying for me and that if I ever needed any help, to give him a call. Well, so I called him. I said, man, I need some help. Now, keep in mind, I don't know what I need help with. At that point, I just wanted those voices in my head to stop. I didn't know I was alcoholic. I didn't know anything about alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous. I just know I need some help. I don't know exactly why, but anyway, he said, well, come on over. We've been praying for you. Well, I ditched those two guys, which they didn't like too good. I think they were excited about going to Maryland. And so anyway, I get up with my brother that morning, and he takes me to church. It's Sunday morning. You got to picture this now. It's Sunday morning, January the 1st. New Year's Day, just a wonderful day to get your life in order, to make some resolutions. I rolled into church with him that morning. Pretty conservative church. I got these pants on that are about 4 inches too short. I got this silk, old vintage silk shirt with this big collar on it, like a disco shirt on, and been up for about 10 days. I look like Pee Wee Herman coming in there with him that morning to church, and people were looking at me and looking at him, and they had the altar call, and I got up there and cried in front of about 200 people and told them I needed help and wanted to get my life in order, and they came up and prayed on me, and it was wonderful. And they tried to help me. What I heard was that because of what I did that morning, my life was automatically just going to get better. They did not say that. They did not tell me that. They did not say that. That's just what my mind, crazy mind, told me. And I left there, and 3 days later, I was drunk. And I stayed involved with them for several months. Looking back on it, they absolutely saved my life. They tried to help me. They provided people and resources. No one once ever said anything about Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism. But I just lived a lie. I would go in there drunk and hungover, and I was drinking the morning they baptized me, and I would leave and just be so conflicted and feel so guilty about the lies I was living and what I was doing. I didn't know what to do. I shaved my head around the same time. Now, I worked with a guy that drank like I did, and one morning I showed up for roll call, and his head was shaved, and I said, "Man, what is up with your head?" And he told me he hooked up with his organization that believes that the problem of man stems from their hair, and that their program of action is they shave their hair off, and that kind of signifies the old man dying. Your old ideas go away, and that when your hair grows back, you're reborn, and you get a new way to live. I was like, man, I need something. I went home and I shaved my head myself. Looked like an idiot. I ain't gonna lie about it. I just looked like a complete idiot. And I had this big scar on my. I had gotten into a fight with a guy out on the streets not long before that, and he had hit me on the head with this hickory stick. I had this big old fresh scar that was showing. I looked like Charles Manson walking around the next day at work. People were looking at me like, man, like, what is up with your head? And I really thought that was going to help me. And I stayed sober for about 3 days on the shaved head. So if you're thinking about shaving your head to stay sober, some of you have tried it. It won't work, not long term. And I started like reading the New Testament and listening to gospel music. I started preaching to people at work, telling them that all the stuff they were doing wrong. And I'd preach to people at work on break about, you know, getting their lives in order. And then I'd sneak out to the parking lot, take me a slug off that Thunderbird wine or that Aristocrat vodka, pop me a couple of Percocets, and then go back in there and preach to them. And you're talking about being in full flight from reality. I mean, I was delusional. And I started seeing a psychiatrist. I was turning to a vegetarian. I was eating. That was before it was even cool before to be a vegetarian. I was just eating vegetables and exercising and just stayed drunk, just stayed delusional. I started making promises to people and I couldn't stay sober. I would leave the house in the morning with this, you know, with all the resolution in the world to go to work and come straight home. I'd get drunk at lunch. And then I would start telling lies to my wife, and then I wouldn't show up at home that night. I meant it. I wanted to, but once I started drinking, there was just no predicting what was going to happen. No matter how many promises I made or how many times she threatened me, I could not take the first drink. And, you know, I always just thought it was somebody else's fault. And if you'd been given the hand I was given, if you were married to her and you had the pressure from the Air Force and all this, that you would drink too. And And then that had nothing to do with my inability to stay away from the first drink. And what happened was I got suicidal. I thought I'd run out of options. I hated what I was doing to my wife, to my family. I attempted suicide 3 times. They tell me I died twice. I remember one time dying. I don't necessarily know the second time, but I had this dog that had mange. This was the second suicide attempt. This dog that had mange. And the veterinarian had given us this poison to kill the mange on the dog, to treat the mange. And this will confirm I'm not the smartest guy on the call here tonight. I had this bright idea that if it killed mange, maybe it would kill a man. And I pulled some of it into a syringe one night, shot it at my home, and laid down on the kitchen floor there in the house and went away from here for a little while. And now what I can tell you is that there was nothing dramatic about it. At the time, I didn't make a phone call or write a note. I did it by myself. And I did it just as kind of nonchalantly as I'd go into the kitchen right now and get a cup of coffee. I mean, there was no thought that, hey, maybe this is a bad idea. Hey, maybe you ought to call somebody and talk to them. None of that entered my mind. I just wanted to check out. So I shot the mange poison up and ended up in the hospital. Ended up in the hospital for several days. And it was a farce. My parents were trying to hide it from the Air Force. They checked me into a civilian hospital under one of my brother's names, and it was just a mess. Devastating to the family. And when I got out of the hospital, I absolutely was convinced and knew I would never go back to drinking and living that way again after going through that experience. I mean, it was impossible to return to that. Here's classic alcoholism right here. I left 3 days out of the hospital. I left Pope Air Force Base with the intent of going straight home. Right when I got out of the gate, this voice comes on one side of my head. It says, man, a few beers might be all right. Probably making a big deal out of nothing. And another voice would come on, dude, you just got out of the hospital from attempted suicide, and you know, your family is waiting for you to get home, and they're watching you, and you've made these promises. Another voice would come on, if you just buy an 8-ounce pony beer instead of a 12 or 16-ounce, it's going to be okay. And the other voice would come on, hey, go straight home like you promised your wife. Another voice would come on, hey, if you eat a Slim Jim before you buy the 8-ounce beers, coat your stomach, you should be okay. The next thing you know what happened. The insane idea won out. I'm about 8 days from a drink, 3 days out of the hospital, devastated the family, and I can't bring that into my mind with sufficient force to prevent me from taking the first drink. That's alcoholism. It doesn't matter how much my mom loves me, how much my wife loves me, how much the doctor threatens, that's not going to stop me from taking that first drink. It's strange mental blank spots. And then next thing you know, I pulled off to the Quick Stop in Anderson Creek. I bought me a spicy Slim Jim and an 8-pack of Budweiser Ponies. I was off to the races. And to say that my family was mystified would be an understatement. They just couldn't believe it. And, you know, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't intend to drink that morning. I chose not to drink that morning. Guess what? I drank. That's why I understand what the book says when we've lost the power of choice. I don't have any choice. I don't have any choice today. If you give me a choice today, I'm probably going to make the wrong one. I've lost that privilege, just like Dr. Bob says. Didn't know it at the time, but what happened was I got discharged out of the Air Force. Somehow I got out honorably. I was under an investigation for some other stuff, but anyway, I got out of the Air Force not long after that second suicide attempt. And I was just living like an animal. Wife left, living in the house, infested with fleas that I'm getting ready to lose. motored blood up in this old 72 Volkswagen that I'm driving. So I'm walking and I'm doing things and hanging out, I mean, with people that I just never thought I would be doing. And I basically given up on life. I gave up on myself and had kind of gotten to a place where I was okay with that. I mean, it just wasn't a big deal. I'm going to just move off to some miserable inn and die soon. And I like what Bill Wilson says, how dark it is before the dawn. Because what happened was I left a guy's house one morning to write a bad check at a grocery store. And at that point, that morning, there was no family after me. There was no authorities after me. There was nobody putting pressure on me to do anything. There was no interventions. There was no, I had really no responsibility. And I had just kind of accepted that. I was kind of looking forward to writing another bad check and getting a little cash and going by the bootleggers before I went back to Wayne's house. I left his house that morning walking. I was going to go out to the main road there and hitchhike into town. It was about 8 miles. And which wasn't a big deal. And as I was walking down the road that morning, it was not unlike what had happened 6 or 7 months before that January 1st morning, but I heard these voices in my head that said, man, you need to get your life in order. You just turned 22 years old. Your life should be starting and it shouldn't be ending. And it was like I wanted to die and I didn't want to die. I wanted to drink. I didn't want to drink. And I can remember I had this moment of clarity that, and it wasn't a bright light experience. And it was just a very weak moment of clarity that, man, you need some help. I had never experienced it kind of like that. It was, I had complied before with a lot of stuff just to get out of trouble or to get people off my back. And this was different. And I said two things out loud. I said, there's got to be something better than this. And then I said, God, please help me. I looked up and said it out loud. And here's what I can report to you. I've been sober ever since. I've gotten better ever since that moment. You don't hear that a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous, but this is my experience. And I asked for help. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know I had alcoholism. Didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what I need help with. All I know is I drink a lot, I use a lot of cocaine, and I hurt people. That's all I knew that morning. And if you had asked me, I would have told you that everybody gave up on me and didn't care about me. And I believe that the grace of God came into me and had a different plan for me. I believe that something worked in me that and just kind of came down and picked me up and turned me around halfway and put me on a different path. And I don't want to imply that my life has been just, you know, full of peace and serenity and fruity pebbles and foot massages and all that, because that's not the truth. But what's happened is I've stayed sober ever since that moment, and that whatever that power is, it's been sufficient to keep me from taking the first drink, regardless of what life has thrown at me. And I ended up in a detox that morning through just a crazy series of circumstances. I don't know what a detox is, never been to a detox. I remember being a little aggravated that they put me on suicide watch and wrapped me in this funny blue outfit. And there was a lady watching me through a window. But there's a few things that happened. The guy came in and did an assessment on me. And I told him the truth. I had never told the truth in my life. Never. The truth wasn't in me. I mean, other than by myself, I couldn't have told the dude the truth. Even when it was coming out, I couldn't believe it. More importantly, what happened was when I'm sitting in there, a guy comes in and starts talking to me. I know now he is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he just shared his experience with me. He started talking about himself. He didn't even ask me any questions. He didn't come in and ask me how I'm doing. You know, it's the craziest question in the world to ask somebody in detox sitting in a swimming outfit, how you doing? He didn't ask me that. He didn't ask me if I, what I thought my problem was or, you know, what are you doing? He didn't care about charges and wife and any of that stuff. He just talked about himself. I had never heard anything like that, but while he was talking, I'm like, my God, how does this guy know that I've done this stuff? There was an identification that happened with that guy. You know, looking back on it now, I know it was a classic 12-step call. It's a dying art in Alcoholics Anonymous. But he just shared his experience. And I was able to identify. And I knew that whatever he had, I had it. Because he had done some of the same stuff I'd done. He felt the same way I'd felt. And the guy gave me hope. And he told me a few things. He told me that if I was like him, that I had alcoholism. Now, what that meant was that when I start drinking, I can't stop. That we're different than a normal drinker, that most people can drink a few, they feel it, and they stop. Alcoholics can't do that. And I knew that I had that. Whatever that he was talking about, I had it. He also said the worst thing about it is you got a mind that tells you it's okay to do it. And that he talked about when you touch a stove and it burns you, you kind of know not to touch it again. But that when it comes to alcohol, that piece is missing in our brain. That we'll drink and get in trouble, we'll drink and get hurt, we'll drink and hurt somebody else, we'll swear it off and then we'll go back and do it. I knew that I had that. That's basically alcoholism. If you'd asked me what I thought my problem was at that time, I would have told you that my mom loved my little brother more than she loved me. That my dad moved me around a lot as a kid and I had low self-esteem. That people picked on me and made fun of me. And that led to my, you know, my insecurity and that low self-image people I talk about. And, you know, we moved around a lot and if you were married to her, you would do these things too. And if the Air Force put this pressure on you. And that's why I thought, you know, I drank and did the things I did. And this guy just cleared it up pretty clear that, hey, no, you got alcoholism. That physically you're different than a normal drinker. And you got a mind that's basically pickled. And it's got nothing to do with any of that other stuff. And that, I understood that. And I was actually somewhat relieved to find out that I had alcoholism. Because I often wondered what the heck's wrong with me. And he explained it by that. And it's no, you know, that, so the reason I'm an alcoholic is when I start drinking, I can't stop. Simple. Problem is I got a mind that I can't not stay away from the first drink. He flat out told me that if I had that, that there was no human power that could help me. And that if I didn't find a higher power, that I wasn't going to be able to stay sober. He didn't sugarcoat it or anything like that. And he told me, now I'm still about drunk. I mean, I drank that morning. He told me to go back to my room and to get on my knees and to ask for help. And he said, what do you got to lose? He says, doesn't matter if you believe or don't believe. He says, just do it. And he pulled one of them classic AA lines like, hey, you know, look at, if you think you've done a good job around your life, look at where you're sitting. I mean, it hit me between the eyes. I mean, I'm sitting in detox, wearing a funny blue outfit, talking to this goofy dude. I have not done a good job running my life. And it was just clear to me, as delusional as I was. And anyway, I went back to the room and I said that prayer. I said, God, please help me. And, you know, I've been sober ever since. I best know I've done some form of prayer ever since that day. What would happen to me was I would not long after that, I would be introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was introduced to some really just basic things, the importance of having a group, home group, and participating in that home group. I was introduced to the concept of sponsorship and the importance of having a sponsor and staying current with a sponsor. I was introduced to the idea that our solution is in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're outlined in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the solution to all my problems, not just my alcoholism. And I was told that if I just put half of the energy that I put into drink, I'm 110% drinker. I do what I got to do. And I'm all in. And I was told if I just had used half that energy to stay sober, that I probably would make it. And that anything that I kind of put in front of my recovery, I would probably lose. And, you know, that stuff doesn't sound real enticing when you're sitting in a detox and you don't know what's going to happen when you get out and they're telling you to do this stuff. If you'd have asked me what I thought I needed was, hey, I need some money to pay these people that I owe. That's really important. And I need you to give me a place to stay. That's really important. And I need you to give me a job. And I need you, oh, by the way, I don't have a car because the motor blew up in the Volkswagen. So I need you to give me a car to get back and forth. And I really need my wife to come back and stop sleeping with my cousin. And that's important. And probably need a doctor and a therapist and some medications. And if I can get all that, then I won't need that other stuff. And it looks like that's the solution. You know, job and some money and a car and a woman. You know, what's funny about that, I didn't get any of that stuff. I'm glad that I got hooked up with some good men in Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, they said, you should not even worry about that stuff. The way you live, you destroyed all that. What makes you think you need it back right now? Focus on getting sober, staying sober, and trying to help somebody else. And you know what? For some reason, I was willing to do that, and my life started to change. I took the steps, and I quickly did an inventory and a fifth step with a guy. And I was 5 weeks sober. I started making amends at 8 weeks sober, and slowly over time, my life started to change. People took a chance on me. Somebody gave me a place to stay. Somebody took a chance and gave me a job. Somebody let me borrow a car until I could, you know, pay for it. And when I started taking different actions and started trying to not work angles and play games with people, folks tried to help me. You know, and I went down to the courthouse and turned myself in for outstanding warrants. And a couple months sober, I thought that was insane, but people in AA told me to do it, that I had to quit running. I always thought they had warrants that they keep running until they catch you. You don't go turn yourself in. But you know what? I went down and turned myself in, and it worked out. It was scary, but it worked out. Got through it. Went and turned myself in for bad checks and tried to make arrangements. It all worked out. And, I was a guy that was like stark raving sober. I mean, I was crazy for AA and, just actively involved, started going into prisons early on. And, what happened was me and my first wife got back together. I was sober about 9 months. I held on to a resentment at her for a long time because I thought she would immediately come back. The house we lost, we were able to actually get that back through a series of just non-alcoholic friends helping us out. And sober about 3 years. And I tell you, my first run through, the first time I took the steps, got to step 6 and 7, and yeah, man, I'm ready to change. And I was never more ready to change then than ever. And what I found out was a lot of those things that I did for years didn't just immediately go away. It kind of disappeared for a while. I was sober 3 years. My wife, who had come back, finally realized that she liked other guys more than she liked me. And she left. It was tough. I didn't want that to happen. I can tell you now, looking back, it was way better that we should have never been together, but I started stealing money from work. Now, I don't recommend this, but I started creatively taking money from work And you know, I went through an experience between 3 and 5 years sober where the world got dark again. I'm blaming other people. I'm blaming God. I mean, look at what you've done, you know, and here I am. It sounds like a contradiction. The interesting thing about it is I'm extremely active in the program. I'm helping people and sponsoring people. I'm going to prisons. I'm going to detox. I'm in the home group. But there's these two little things that I'm not willing to give to the program or give to God. That's a relationship and money. And what happened to me was when I got honest with my sponsor about what I was doing, there was a spiritual solution that showed up. I thank God for good sponsorship because my sponsor helps me to find spiritual solutions in what appear to be impossible situations. And long story short, I got through a divorce without arguing or fighting because of good men in AA that helped me figure out how to do that, told me how to do that. I was able to go back to an employer who took a risk on me when I first got sober and turned myself in for stealing thousands of dollars from them. I thought that was insane. And my sponsor had a different idea. And anyway, I turned myself in and made an amends to the employer and really knew they were going to fire me and was prepared to go to jail. Matter of fact, I had the name of the group picked out. I was going to start in jail when they locked me up. The breaking out group. Here's what happened was I didn't get fired. We had fired people for way less than what I'd done. And I ended up, I got a damn promotion like a week or two after turning myself in. And ended up working at that company for a long time. What happened to me was I started 5 years sober. I mean, I had always known this, but it came at a deeper level that I realized that Alcoholics Anonymous is not something that I go to. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous is a way of life. Alcoholics Anonymous is a set of principles. If we practice them as a way of life, not only it relieves the obsession to drink, but it helps us to be useful and happy and have purpose. And I'm supposed to actually take these principles and these steps with me everywhere I go. I'm supposed to actually take God with me everywhere that I go. And I realized that through good sponsorship that I turned just about everything over except for two things, money and a relationship, because of fear. I doubt the power of God. I doubt that the program can fix those two areas. And, you know, I realized that at 5 years sober that I need to turn everything over, not just drinking and a few things. I need to turn my entire life over to the program. And what I can tell you is that I went through a completely new kind of spiritual awakening and surrender after, you know, making those amends and getting through that divorce. And I started consciously taking God and the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere that I went. And I ended up working in that career for 24 years and went from basically sweeping floors and stealing to being the president of one of their companies, Fortune 500 company, managing billions of dollars and thousands of employees. I don't have the skill set to do that. But with the power of God and the steps and the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do anything. And I went from basically in a crazy, unhealthy relationship and resentful at women to a couple years later to get married and now being married 25 years and have other than one time, not long after we first got married, me and wife have never had a serious argument. That's not because of anything I've done. That's because the power of the steps and traditions and God work. And I would go on to, you know, to know today that the power of God goes deep. I'm a guy that's been, I'm overpaid in every area of my life today. And most importantly, I mean, A has mended all my relationships with family and friends, and I don't have much in unfinished business anymore. I have a good feeling to be free. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me purpose. And I know that AA is not about me. My life's not about me. AA is not a selfish program. I've been given the gift of recovery, and my job is to help other people have that. That we really do have the power to avert misery and death for people. That's an awesome responsibility, that it's expected of me to do that in the 12th step if I recover. And we don't do it perfect. The steps says we try to hear the message. The steps says we practice principles. So I'm grateful to be a member of AA. I'm grateful to try to carry the message that was carried to me so freely and so just so gentle. I appreciate y'all listening to me. God bless you. Thank you.